Or we can read something and then see about some questions.
Hello, Marge. I live with a nice Spanish man who's...
Sorry?
I live with a Spanish gentleman.
Uh-huh.
And he goes to the local Buddhist temple here and is interested in Krishna consciousness. And he asked me a lot of philosophical questions, which I feel somewhat competent to answer. But he asked me the other day one question which I really didn't know how to answer, which was, because he's gay, he said, how a gay is treated in ISKCON. And whilst I have friends who live in a gay, it seems that they're kind of like, it's not discussed at all. So I didn't really know what to say. It seems also there would be vast differences to how that question is answered in different areas of the world as well.
How are they treated? Just pink.
The sannyasis and the brahmacharis? Who should dress pink, sir?
I said, just pink, that's how they're treated.
Just pink.
Well, our policy is to treat everyone with due regard. But we don't have much regard for the orientation, as it's called today. We frankly think, on the basis of Vedic literature, that one is headed in the wrong direction. Now, we may not stand on your head or, you know, throw darts at you for that reason, but if you want to know, then there's two questions. You know, how do we treat you? Well, we treat everybody nicely. You know, happy to see everyone. If you want to know what we think of being gay, we think it stinks.
For some people, it's a bodily designation. For him, he very much identifies with it.
Yeah.
And it would be horribly offensive to him to hear that, I think.
Well, tough noogies.
And that automatically sort of loses his interest in religion at all. So.
That's his misfortune. You know, just if you're straight, but you're very much lusty, you know, you want to be sexually active, as they call it. Well, you may not like this movement very much because we're in favor of being sexually inactive or less active, hardly active at best. So, you know, when, as soon as you hear it, you may say, oh, well, you know, I'm going to go find the Maharishi or something. There's not, Prabhupada said that. He said, when I came to America, I thought as soon as I say these four rules, they say, now you go back. Go back to India. But that is the situation. That now, why do we? What's our problem? Our problem is that, according to Vedic literature, according to Bhagavad Gita, one doesn't become happy by sense gratification.
Can I just say one thing there, Marge? When you talk about sense gratification, you seem to be associating homosexuality with expressive sort of acts, whereas this is much more a bodily designation in terms of culture and identity.
Well, in terms of culture and identity, then we just think you're making a mistake. As anyone who thinks he's this body is making a mistake. Mm-hmm. Generally, you know, the culture and identity, that's fine, but usually people want to do something also. But if it's just, you know, I have this designation. Well, you know, fine. You're not breaking any of our rules by having a designation. We just think that it's ignorant. Anyone who thinks that he's this body, what is that? Yes, yatma buddhi kunape tridhatu kesayeva gokara. Anyone who thinks that the body, which is bag of mere bile and air, is himself, has the mentality of a cow or an ass.
It seems to be different what you're saying. Like, if someone thinks they're Polish, we don't really say that stinks in a sort of very condemnatory sort of way.
Well, we may not, you know, when you walk in the door, say, well, you're what? Out. But if you want to know what we think of it, particularly, you know, I mean, let's look at this. I'm gay. It means, first of all, that you're in a bodily designation. That's immediately foolish. Second of all, your bodily designation is built on sex life. which is means your mind is in an unfortunate place. Just like, you know, people who are not gay, it's not generally that their identity is, I'm straight. Right? Now, of course, they have other ways of being obnoxious about it. If the real thing is, you know, that I'm young and handsome and romantic, well, that amounts to the same thing, really. I'm sexually lusty. So you're going to have a hard time if you're lusty in any orientation. Then you're headed for misery. Yehi samsparsha jabhoga dukkayoni evite.
So do you mean to say it's basically the same sexuality?
No, first thing is that in one sense it's the same. Anybody who's on the bodily platform thinks he's going to be happy by lusty desires. He's a fool and he's headed for further distress. Now maybe that's enough. We don't have to get into it. You're already in the soup, whether you're straight or gay. So maybe you've already decided that you're not interested in us. We don't have to go into the details. But that's the first thing. Now, if somebody really wants to get into the details of it further, gay just means a perverted reflection of a perverted reflection. We say that our real nature is to be giving pleasure to Krishna. And in the perverted reflection of reality, we're trying to enjoy and be the center of pleasure. So that means that we're acting in a perverted reflection of reality. That perverted reflection of reality does have certain norms according to Vedic literature. And basically that means straight. So gay is now a perverted reflection of a perverted reflection. Because you're not even... already you're thinking you're this body, which is backwards. And now you're thinking you're the body you're not. That is just... It's not that they're also thinking I'm not this body, I'm that body. That's not our philosophy. I'm not this body, I'm spirit soul. I'm not this body, I'm that body. Now, it may be that we don't have to go directly for the jugular that way or to deliver the bad news up front. There are other ways to look at it. It can be said that it's that affection of one man for another is natural, and that's there in the spiritual world, but it's there in the form of friendship. The cowherd boys are all affectionate toward Krishna. Krishna's affectionate toward them, but it's not contaminated by this material bodily concept of life. It's, you know, but why does it appear in the material world? Well, because it's there in the spiritual world, but not in such a gross form.
I just wonder, when we have so many different sort of approaches from the temples around the world, like in India, for instance, you get people being, you know, extraordinarily, say, exclusive and saying this is totally unacceptable to much more liberal approaches in the West. I mean, how do we stand with it? Is all that degree of moral relativity appropriate to the simple fact of preaching?
Well, as far as, you know, India or the West or how it's approached, I suppose it's a question of, number one, understanding, and number two, strategy. There are those who've started to lose their understanding of the thing. People who are pleading for a third gender and trying to legitimize it and say that, you know, Srila Prabhupada would somehow endorse it or understand it or bless it or whatever. Their understanding is damaged severely, and they're busy trying to damage other people's understanding so that they'll be accommodated. You know, accommodate me, because really what Prabhupada was saying was X, not Y. when Prabhupada clearly was saying Y, not X. Could you bring my computer from upstairs?
Sure.
Okay, here. There was a letter going around. You know, I wasn't really aware that this was a big, I knew gay was around, but I didn't know that gay Vaishnavism as a flavor was being offered for sale as a bona fide commodity. And then until somebody asked me about it at Radhadesh and handed me a copy of this, I guess what was the original? Yeah, the Tritiya Prakriti letter, which I guess there's now several, but this was seems to have been the Adi Tritiya Prakriti letter. So I did a little research on it and wrote her a response, which is what's coming on the computer. But so that's the first thing. If you want to be accommodated by messing around with the philosophy, we have a severe problem here.
I don't unfollow that. I haven't followed that whole discussion, but are they simply saying it's something?
Essentially, that it's legitimate that the Vedic culture has a benevolent place for it, and that Prabhupada also.
But are they simply saying that it's allowed to exist in this group of people? There are gay Vaishnavas?
No, really. They're trying to present it as a legitimate option. That ought to be endorsed for its that we ought to be celebrating difference and not simply that we ought to be celebrating difference. And what's the problem here? You know, somebody likes vanilla ice cream and someone likes strawberry. Why make an issue of it? So why make an issue of this idea that someone simply has a different orientation? So they basically want to do what they're trying to do and what they've already successfully done in the secular culture and just make it just another option and make it that the Vedic culture is neutral in the matter.
But I read the Tritiya Prakriti letter.
Yeah.
And it seems like they were more making a historical argument than.
That's part of it. They've pulled out in an exercise in what I think is pretty bad scholarship. They've pulled out quotes from here and there and tried to demonstrate that it's all legitimate. Pranayana Maharaj did a pretty good job on him. Mm-hmm. If you saw his
response. There was a response from Pranayana Maharaj too.
Yeah, I wasn't impressed by the response. You know, I mean, everybody can write a response, but I just didn't think it had that much credibility to it. But I took a different approach. I didn't so much
Maharaj, I'm sorry, I don't understand the final issue on your side would be what, that you can't be a gay Vaishnava? Is it incompatible? So don't call
me? No, you could be a gay Vaishnav, you could be a wife-swapping Vaishnav, you can be a hashish smoking Vaishnav.
What I don't get is if heterosexual and gay are just basically different forms of sexuality, or even though one may be more further than the other, then what's the problem if some people have different ways of enjoying material energy?
We have a problem. Just like there are acceptable ways of to perform pious activities and try to go to the heavenly planets and enjoy is, from one point of view, abominable because you're trying to enjoy the material energy. From another point of view, at least it's sanctioned. Like meat eating. Prabhupada said if they, those who are addicted to meat eating, they can kill a goat and offer it to goddess Kali. Prabhupada said we're not against that because it's there in the Shastra. So it's stupid, but it's legal. But killing a cow is stupid and illegal. So it's not that the literature is just neutral on it and say, killing is killing. From one point of view, any killing is probably so like dry stool or wet stool. But then when you get down to it, there are distinctions. Here's the approach that I took with with Tritiya Shakti, Tritiya Prakriti. So here's, this was to a lady in Radhadesh, where she was attending a seminar. I've gone through the paper, some comments. The paper is a good example of how scholarship can be used to try to justify all sorts of degradation. First of all, the author is obviously biased, so I don't trust him to do a job of impartial scholarship. On page 3 he says, quote, "There is no recorded evidence of any system of male castration, either in ancient or contemporary India." End of quote. I've personally read accounts of male castration in contemporary India, and that in itself invalidates his premise. You know, there's no account. Well, all you have to do is have one account, and your premise hits the bottom, which is what happened here. I've read an account. Therefore, to say that there's no account is bogus. But that's just a side issue. Here's the main point. The author begins by offering his respectful obeisances unto his beloved Gurudev, Srila Prabhupada. And he ends by saying that homosexuality is simply another feature of the wonderful variegatedness of the material world. And so it is, quote, pointless to argue over who is higher, lower, more important, less important, etc. End of quote. That is not, however, the position that his beloved Gurudev takes. According to his Gurudev, homosexuality is not, quote, just another variety, close quote, no higher or lower than any other. On the contrary, it is something degraded, something not to be uttered, something less than animal, something abominable. So we have a choice of attitudes between that of the anonymous author, at least it was anonymous when I got the paper, and that of his beloved Gurudev. I'll go with his Gurudev. Thank you, hoping this finds you in good health. P.S. Here are some folio hits. Sorry, I don't have the references attached. You can find them such and such and such. And here are some of the hits. This homosex is also another sign of impotency. They do not feel sex impulse to woman. They feel sex impulse in man. That means he is impotent. It is impotency. So things are coming so rubbish now. Things are coming so rubbish now. Prabhupada, now this progeny is bother. It is sense enjoyment, homosex. Progeny they don't want. They're not interested. Only sense gratification. This is another sign of impotency. When after enjoying so many women they become impotent, then they artificially create another sex impulse in homosex. This is the psychology. So people are degraded so much. Another. The things have been topsy-turvied. A person on religious category, he's advocating something, oh, it is not to be uttered. Then Prabhupada utters it. Homosex. You see? And Prabhupada said, the world is degrading to the lowest status, even less than animal. The animal also do not support homosex. They have never sex life between male to male.
Well, that's not true. That's
I know
not true.
That, but that's Prabhupada's take on it. They are less than animal. People are becoming less than animal. This is all due to godlessness.
Well, I think it's in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says that material culture and Kali Yuga revolves around the genitals and the anus. And then I think of the moral relativity that we have in Islam temples, of course, which is necessary. We're going to preach to 10% of the population in the West is openly gay or whatever, so in temples we accept them.
We accept what? In temples what?
We accept that homosexual people come and we want to preach to them, obviously.
You know, I'm ambivalent about that,
well,
to tell you the truth.
Marriage.
Well, I'll shock you. I'll shock you in a minute. First, let me hit you with the rest of the Prabhupada quote. When they are sanctioning abortion, homosex, now they are finished. They have no value. Another one. Just like yesterday you told me the students are talking about homosex. That means tamagun. Nitai, this women's liberation movement, the leaders are also homosexual. They're lesbians. Of course, again, that's a generalization. Prabhupada said, just see, Hare Krishna, the whole world is on the verge of ruination. Kali Yuga. Another one. The hippies are nothing but a group of madmen, that's all. a madman, they publicly sex, that's all. This Allen Ginsberg movement is that, homosex, public sex. Ginsberg was very proud that he had introduced homosex, he was telling me. Then there's another, finally a letter from Prabhupada, 1975. My dear such and such, please accept my blessings. I am in due receipt of your letter dated such and such date and have noted the contents. I am very sorry that you have taken to homosex. It will not help you advance in your attempt for spiritual life. In fact, it will only hamper your advancement. I do not know why you have taken to such abominable activities. What can I say? Anyway, try to render whatever service you can to Krishna. Even though you are in a very degraded condition, Krishna, being pleased with your service attitude, can pick you up from your fallen state. You should stop this homosex immediately. It is illicit sex. Otherwise, your chances of advancing in spiritual life are nil. Show Krishna you are serious, if you are. So that's his Gurudev's take on it.
But you can apply this sort of quote to anything.
Pardon me?
You can apply this quote to intoxication or heterosexual indulgences, etc.
Yeah, but it certainly is different from Prabhupada's, from the assertion that homosexuality is just another variety, no higher or lower than any other.
Sure, it's more degraded, but...
Well, that's my point, first of all. Let's get things straight. Before we decide how we're going to respond to it, let's decide what it is. Mm-hmm. And what it is not simply, you know, another kind of flavor, no better or no worse, no higher nor no lower. Prabhupada says it's the pits.
It's intrinsically... lower than just regular.
Yes, that's what Prabhupada is saying.
Between a man and a woman.
Yeah, that's what Prabhupada is saying. This is really the pits. You know, it's not just lust, but it's perverted. That's Prabhupada. Of course, everything's perverted, but Prabhupada, you know, so rubbish. They have become so degraded. Prabhupada didn't, you know, there was no like, well, it's just another wonderful variety of Krishna's creation to be celebrated. You know, forget that. That's rubbish. And you know, and the Prabhupada who's like understands everybody and is non-judgmental is a Prabhupada that never existed. You know, I meet a lot this mythologized Prabhupada, you know, the wonderful grandfatherly figure who understood everybody and accepted everybody as they were and was made no value judgments. You know, wow, it's so different from the person that I knew.
But he encouraged everybody.
Yeah, you show Krishna that you're serious. If you are, give it up immediately. Not like, well, I understand that you know you've taken to this, and well, I understand that everybody has a different orientation and a different preference, and well, you know, forget that. You know, you're nonsense. You're rubbish. Give it up. It won't help you. It's just an obstruction in your spiritual life, and less than animal, and so on. That was Prabhupada's take on it, not that, and that's the Bhagavatam's take also. You know, from one point of view, there's no difference between the heart and the head and the anus. But the homosexuals are not described in Srimad Bhagavatam as emanating from the heart of Lord Brahma or from the intelligence of Lord Brahma. Narad Muni comes from the heart. Some other people get the distinction of coming from elsewhere. So, it's depicted that way with value judgments attached. You know, when it's said that such and such comes from the intelligence of the Lord of the universal form, such and such comes. You know, what comes from the back? You know, there's the back of the universal form. Ignorance comes from the back. You know, front and back are non-different, but still, back has like a value judgment attached to it. So ignorance comes from the back of the universal form, and homosexuals come from less than enviable and esteemed portions of that form.
I think from the most pragmatic point of view, you'd have to say that Prabhupada's take on it and your generation's take on it is something which will just die out, because from a moral and social point of view, we're currently brought up with people who, you know, we're brought up with people. So
that's one of those self-fulfilling prophecies, that we have a position which is not socially acceptable. Because it's not socially acceptable, it's going to die out. So it might as well die out now.
Not necessarily. I'm talking about, A, from a pragmatic point of view, preaching.
But that's what you're saying pragmatically. That our position is culturally unacceptable to the modern world. Therefore, it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be able to it's not going to fly in the long run. So we might as well ditch it now.
I mean, the standpoint of saying that we perhaps don't even want homosexuals to come to our temples will be something that this generation simply won't even think of.
Fine. You know, like Prabhupada went to Lower East Side and preached no intoxication. That was not a popular position. Prabhupada preached, you know, Prabhupada didn't come out against the Vietnam War. In the Vietnam era, you know, Prabhupada's only position was that it was the Kshatriyas who should be fighting, not that fighting was bad. He was, you know, preaching violence from Bhagavad Gita.
That to me seems morally right. This doesn't.
Pardon me?
That to me seems morally right to preach war. Yeah.
Well, you know, but you don't mind it. But the folks back there in the midst of the Vietnam era minded it a whole lot. Yeah. Let's pick another one. Prabhupada said we never went to the moon. That was so culturally congenial that he had his own disciples leaving in, you know, like significant numbers. And Prabhupada didn't blink an eye. He didn't say, well, you know, if we say this, Prabhupada in fact, you know, like put it in their face. If he got a newspaper interview and took the opportunity to tell him, you know, he didn't soft pedal it at all and say, well, you know, we're in favor of love of God. The same thing with, you know, a lot of unpopular positions. Prabhupada just put him right out front. He didn't soften his views.
I don't think it's unpopular. I think it's impractical.
But why is it impractical? Because it's unpopular. If it were popular, there'd be no practicality problem. So what you're saying is because it's unpopular, we should ditch it.
No,
there's some steps in between, but that's what it finally comes to.
I mean, impractical in the sense that, to me, I mean, just the way you present it, just seems to say this proportion of the population. I mean, I'm still going to elaborate when you say that.
Okay, why don't I do that?
You know, to the temple.
Let's elaborate on that position. I didn't say I was against it. I said I was rather ambivalent about it.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I'm not eager to say, well, you know, there are also people who, you know, feel this way, and why not, and so on. Why? Because I'm pragmatic also. And I observe that homosexuality tends not to be just an inert philosophy
mm-hmm.
that people theoretically hold, but rather turns out to be an active part of one's life.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, one needs a partner. And therefore people come and will recruit partners, which means that they're not only being degraded, you know, inwardly on the mental platform, but they're purveying degradation, and they're purveying it on our turf. You know, so for the same reason that I might not want somebody coming to our temple who, you know, is obviously drunk and looking for somebody to, you know, ride off with and do a six-pack with.
That's the point. These drunk people don't normally come to the temple to.
Well, you know, fine, and good in one sense because it saves us the trouble of
so
telling them that they have to, you know, showing them the door.
So I assume that homosexual people come to the temple to pick up partners.
Yeah, I mean, fine. And from their point of view, I can understand that very well. That, you know, here's a good place where you can pick up partners. And, you know, do they make a distinction as to the age of the partners? We don't know. Yes, straight people can go looking for young boys too, but it seems to be the final data is not yet in about whether how high the discriminatory level of homosexuals are. You know, how far the distance is between homosexuality and sodomy, and particularly pederasty. Sodomy, there is no difference. Sodomy and homosexuality go together, but how far they are off from pederasty. We have a pederasty problem in our movement,
mm-hmm.
And we're interested in protecting our young people from predators.
There seems to be a big difference between, you know, people in charge of children and people coming to
prison. Yeah, but, you know, if people are prowling, people are prowling. And, you know, first they come, and then they, you know, take prasadam and chant Hare Krishna, then they join, and then they look for ways that they can be close to the children, and then they go after them.
So how often did it happen?
Pardon me?
Well, how often did it happen? How often did it happen that gay people joined and gave up sexual life and then...
Yeah, no, I therefore don't have a problem. See, then the person's not... You know, when a person comes and he's like, gay, I'm gay and buy me as gay because that's what I am. Well, you know, that's a problem. person says, you know, I have a problem, I'm addicted to boys, I, you know, I don't know how to get over it, but, you know, da 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 da, you know, and he wants to change, that's different.
Okay.
How different it is, I don't know, but it's different. The person recognizes, you know, I have a problem, I'm addicted to girls, I'm addicted to boys, I'm addicted to marijuana, I'm addicted to something, but, you know, I'm seeking spiritual life and I'm willing to change that.
But isn't that everyone?
No, it's not everyone.
So why discriminate against homosexual people? I mean, it seems to me that this applies to everybody breaking the principles.
Yeah, well, I'm not, I haven't come out and said, you know, if you're this, you can't come. I'm just saying I may not be so unhappy if this percentage of, you know, to sacrifice the participation of this group because they don't feel super welcome.
But I think on his question, like, how do you then distinguish between just a regular boy that comes to the temple and maybe he's looking for a girlfriend? You don't know.
Well, what we may not distinguish. If, when we see the person's coming around and really what he's trying to do is, you know, pick up one of the Gurukul girls, after a while, you know, we may say, you know, Charlie, it's nice that you're coming and chanting and taking prasadam, but, you know, something's going to have to change here or you're not going to be welcome. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're not putting the onus on heterosexual people coming, putting the onus on gay people.
Yes, can we not say that we distinguish between for people who are coming to fulfill their sexual desires, either is homosexuality or heterosexuality?
At least for a start.
This prejudice.
Innocent until proven guilty.
Pardon me?
Innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I'm not, you know, putting up big blocks and road signs. I'm just telling you my personal orientation. My personal orientation is that if some of our gay friends feel that they don't want to join, in the long run, they may be saving us from a problem.
Well, I find it's funny just because two points of view. Firstly, I do know gay people who are arbitraries, etc., and these have a difficult time and feel very isolated, but really do their best and are great examples for me, at least. The other thing is that I just wonder, without being confrontational, I think maybe you would appreciate, it's a point of argument, that your view in at least secular British society...
Oh, I know, it's absolutely incorrect.
It's the danger of it, the homophobia. I mean, people.
First of all, let's get rid of this term, homophobia. I'm not afraid of them.
No,
it's homo antipathy, okay?
That's the word.
It's homo antipathy. That's the word. But let's fight with the word. Let's go right to the beginning of it. You know, because this is cheating. Homophobia. I'm not afraid.
Okay, Marge, thank you for the word. Would you like to define it?
Homo antipathy? I don't like them.
Okay. But how can you dislike somebody based on their bodily designation?
It's not their bodily designation. It's their...
It's not bodily designation?
No. I mean, no, it's not. It's not just a designation. Mm. You know, I'm American, I'm German. You know, I'm a pot smoker. It's more than a bodily designation. You know, it's a commitment to a certain set of degraded practices. It's not just a bodily designation. You know, I'm a pederast. It's not a bodily designation.
What is it if it's not a bodily designation?
Pardon me?
They're all part of having a bodily designation.
It's more than having, you know, it's okay, you know, I'm German, I'm French. I can live with those bodily designations. I'm a pederast. It's more than just, you know, this is what my body is. It's more, this is what I'm committed to for sense gratification.
Well, I don't understand.
It's not just a bodily designation.
For instance, being German entails a certain amount of nationalism and thought process. Of
fine.
Being gay has a certain sort of process, not just a static designation.
Fine.
Gay or nationalism.
Fine. But Prabhupada considered it particularly abominable. It's not against the four regulative principles to be German.
Unfortunately.
It's not, you know, particularly obnoxious to be French or Spanish or Italian or you know, well, I don't know about America.
But apart from the perceived negative effect they have on our society, is not their degraded situation calling for all the more compassion?
Compassion is one thing.
Tolerance?
No. You know, when you say tolerance, compassion, it's not like, well, you're in the Brahmacharya ashram and, you know, you're... I see that you're holding hands with Bhakta George and you know, you kind of got something going there. But we're tolerant. We're understanding.
Well,
we're not.
I mean, you know.
Well, what do you mean by tolerant?
Allowing gay people to come to the temples and
welcome. I've already said I'm not committed to refusing them entrance.
Sure, but yeah.
But what I said was, if they don't come, if they choose not to come, it doesn't particularly vex me. Mm-hmm. That's different from saying they can't come, I won't let them come. If they choose not to come because they hear that, you know, that we have, that our orientation is not friendly to theirs, I'm not, you know, it doesn't upset me.
Okay, but that's the point. I just make this last point because I'm sure there's many more questions. But in terms of the media, who are largely gay, in terms of the entertainment industry is largely gay, if this kind of attitude gets out...
Doesn't bother me in the slightest.
We will be stigmatized.
If we didn't go to the moon, we can be against gays.
Sure, I agree we didn't go to the moon, but gay people are all such a large part of society.
Not as large as the people who accept mundane science as gospel.
Well, it's true, so why should we be so...
Don't ask me, but my Guru Maharaj, put it right up front. He's the founder of Acharya. Who am I supposed to follow?
No, I'm not doubting his authority. I'm doubting your interpretation of it.
I mean, this is objective fact. He had media interviews. He could have talked about anything that he wanted.
Did he talk about homosexuality in media interviews? No.
Pardon me? It wasn't such an issue at the time. Yeah. But you're missing the point. Prabhupada knew that the media was not receptive to this highly anti-scientific premise, and Prabhupada chose to put it right front and center when he met the media. One of our god brothers said that Prabhupada was a media disaster, and he was, because a proper person, a proper person gets coached by his media guy and says things that little sound bites that will fly with as many people as possible. And Prabhupada came out with women have 50% of the brain substance, we never went to the moon. I mean, this is the stuff that Prabhupada put right up front in his contact with the media. So, am I worried that the media is not going to accept my, so-called my views of homosexuality, that we think it's degraded, that we don't look upon it simply as another valid choice, that we don't honor homosexuality as much as we do heterosexuality, that we don't esteem it as merely another orientation, that we actually think it's, as the Bible says, an abomination. Am I worried that the media is going to, be turned off by that? No.
Okay, well, you may come here for a few days and disrupt years of intense preoccupation.
Fine. It's not a problem with me. I'm ready to do that. Mm-hmm. I'm radical. It's fine with me. I'm not big on PR.
It has, though, in just one practical example, Boy George was gay. Was a very, very eloquent spokesman for the movement.
Yes and no. I mean, it had an upside down side.
Well, in terms of
in terms of PR, I was walking through the Charing Cross tube station one time, seeing a picture of him with, his crown and peacock feathers.
Well, the Beatles weren't exactly, the most savory people all the time.
Right. But, Prabhupada was not... Okay.
And he was marginalized out of the movement, right?
Pardon me?
He was marginalized in his own words. I don't know exactly what happened by anti...
Poor George?
What's the word? Homo antipathy.
Homo antipathy, right.
Is that...
No, it's not. Word? It's not a current word. I made it up. But homophobia wasn't a word until some smart media person made it up. Mm-hmm. And it's really a cheating word. I deal... My services words. It's a cheating word. It's got an implicit invalid attack in it. Like fear of heights, fear of flying, fear of homosexuals. That's what phobia is. It's fear. It's not fear, believe me. I really find it distasteful, to say the least. That's not fear. I don't have fear of capsicum. I just can't stand the stuff.
You do have fear that it's socially disruptive potential.
That's not fear. That's a careful analytical judgment. Okay. I'm not afraid of pot smokers. I just have a careful analytical judgment. We have to be. That's on the pragmatic. That's on the very pragmatic side. Mm-hmm. Just on the preaching side. The Prabhupada told a story about a pilgrim. There was a pilgrim who was traveling. He was a Brahmin. And somehow or other he got stranded and he was out in the middle of nowhere for days and days and the guy was starving. And finally he saw a hut off in the distance. You know the story? He saw a hut off in the distance, a little house. And he thought, thank God I can... I'm saved, I can get some food. So he approached the house, and as he approached, he saw that it was the home of a Muslim. And those were the days where he knew that if he entered this house, his caste as a Brahmin was finished. But he was so hungry that he knocked on the door, and the gentleman invited him in, and he asked, you know, I'm starving, do you have any food? The man said, sir, please sit down. And he gave the man a little food, and the Brahmin quickly devoured it. And the Brahmin said, sir, do you have any more? And the Muslim said, I'm very sorry, I've given you all I have. And the Brahmin said, oh, I've lost my caste, and still I'm hungry. So that was Prabhupada's, the story Prabhupada used to illustrate what he thought about compromise. He wrote to Giriraj Maharaj one time, he said, my Guru Maharaj never compromised, I never compromise, nor should any of my disciples ever compromise. And I like that. I find that attractive about Prabhupada. There were lots of people who, you know, they bent their teachings for popularity. They fashioned their presentation to what they thought would get followers. And that's what they're all about. I grew up in a tradition which, Reformed Judaism, which essentially was an attempt at winning accommodation by compromising all the principles that were inherent in Orthodox and even conservative Judaism. And what I saw was that at the end they wound up with no content. They had no content because they compromised, you know, all that was left were a few social rituals and a kind of a tribal identity, but there was no philosophy, there were no austerities, there was nothing left. And in fact, from what I understand statistically, they're the fastest shrinking portion of the Jewish community, because there's no reason why, as a Reformed Jew, I shouldn't marry a Catholic or a Buddhist or anything else. And there's really no difference between being Jewish and being non-Jewish. It's practically non-different. So the people who are growing somehow or other, it seems, are the Orthodox. They don't lose their people because they have a strong sense of what they're about. And the guys who wanted to be accommodated got so accommodated that there's nothing left to them. So I would expect that this movement will probably go the same way. But I hope I won't be around for it.
As the Reformed.
Pardon me?
As the Reformed.
Yeah, it'll go the same way. There'll be the gay Vaishnavs, the lesbian Vaishnavs, the pederast Vaishnavs, the necrophiliac Vaishnavs.
It raises a very interesting moral question, because sort of Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada quotes Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, was saying, in the material world there is no right and wrong. It's just,
yeah, that's fine.
So it just seems to me, do you really think...
That Prabhupada's take on that is, it's all wrong.
Right, exactly. But did you really think in 100 years, if there are, like, you know, gay Vaishnavas and, you know, pederastic Vaishnavas, might they be really considered Vaishnavas?
Of course they'll be considered Vaishnavas, because by then everything will be so topsy-turvy and degraded that everything will be everything else.
So it's like a time warp in the room to a certain extent for me.
It's a time warp. That where the whole Kali Yuga is going this way,
right,
and there's a little portion of it that's going that way. Mm-hmm. And we're being asked to turn around.
Can I ask you one last question?
Sure.
It seems to me that we've discussed the philosophical side and different social elements.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was a gay person, or if there are gay people sitting in this room, it really feels to me that it's a very harsh life they've been dealt, but that they're also being dealt with very harshly, from what I've heard you say, in a very sort of, you know, they've really got to suppress everything, basically.
We have no place, for example, for homosexual marriage.
Sure, and that sort of stuff.
The state of Massachusetts does. We don't.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know they did that.
They just did it, from what I hear.
Belgium also. Good.
You might want to change your
driver's license.
So as much as I may agree that it's something which is more abnormal than normal heterosexual sex, I still really wonder, what are they supposed to do? I mean, I was brought up around
change.
I'm a sexual, and one
change.
One thing that seems to be very much across the spectrum in all different forms of psychology all through the last century would be that this kind of suppression of the sexual desire is very destructive. And haven't we seen
we have a problem with, I have a problem with psychology as it's been.
Well, let's just look at the basic facts. I mean, we understand.
Let's look at the basic.
Our own movement that if you for whatever reasons, egotistical reasons, you decide to suppress your sexuality.
Sorry.
It can often explode in your face.
It can.
You're asking
but
a whole group.
I would recommend to you a very fine essay by a computer, in which he takes on this very issue. I think it appeared in a book called Mauve Gloves and Mad Men, Clutter and Vine. Anyway, it's out there somewhere. The argument is something like this. He says that according to, you know, the generally accepted school of psychology, the human organism is something like a boiler, and steam is building up inside. And unless you let off that steam, the boiler is going to explode. And therefore, the periodic letting off of steam is healthy for the human organism, psychologically helpful for the human organism.
Would you agree materially?
No. He says that rather than take the boiler room model, he says, let's take the computer. The computer has something called a yes gate, as I'm told. You can, see if I've got it right. But basically, there's a decision point in the program, and it's yes or no. And when it becomes yes, then it moves forward. And what can happen is that, you know, the yes gate starts opening up other yes gates, and pretty soon it's yes, 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 yes. I'll give you a statistic. This is, since you want hard statistics, let me think about it. There's the latest, you know, there was the Kinsey report and all that stuff, but it's outdated. The latest one is from about 8 years ago. There was a survey undertaken. Basically, the government wanted to find out what they could do about AIDS, and they realized they didn't know anything about sex in terms of what people do, and how could they aim at a particular kind of it if they didn't know, you know, what the world is, what Americans are doing out there. So they commissioned some scholars and so on who proposed a broad statistical survey, which the government later scrapped because of individual political objections. There were, you know, some wild Christians who thought it was impious even to make the inquiries. But then they got private funding and finished the job, although on a smaller scale. What I understand, it's pretty much the definitive survey of what goes on. And they found out, actually, that Americans tend to be fairly conservative, not as, you know, what you think goes on in America is really not what goes on. People are much more pedestrian about things. But what did emerge in the survey, and you can look up the statistics, is that the more that people engage in an unusual sexual practice, the more likely they are to engage in other unusual sexual practices. It's not that if you did one, then that was kind of like, okay, we've done it. Once you start on that road, well, that's not, you know, that was good, but what else is there? So that's Wolf's model, that there's these yes gates, and once you start opening them up, you start getting, you know, the whole organism saying, yes, 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 yes. That's what actually the Shastra tells us. It's not that if you say no to sense gratification, you'll explode.
No, I agree, but sexually it seems to be a bit different in the history of the movement.
Sexually seems to be a different what?
In the history of ISKCON.
I don't accept that there's an adequate history of ISKCON performed yet.
What,
you know, you might give me an...
we can't make a historical analysis, it's only 30 years.
There's only anecdote. You'll pick out an anecdote and say, well, I know this guy who, you know, this, this, and this, and you'll throw something at me. But that's not history. That's not science. That's just, you know, I knew a guy and this happened. And you, first of all, may not know what happened to the guy. And second of all, that's not history, that we just pick up a story
Well, it is for a lot
of one or two or three people.
First-hand experience is what historians build their analysis.
Pardon me? And also you don't have a control group. You don't have an example of what ISKCON would be like if we said, okay, you know, we were wrong all along. We didn't understand that sex life needs to, you know, you need to blow off some steam for right now and then just to kind of keep ISKCON from going kablooey. And let's try this and see how it works. You don't have that model just to put next to it.
Well, no, it's just a simple fact that a very small percentage of people have remained celibate.
Doesn't tell me anything.
Well, you're asking all homosexual people to remain celibate.
That's right.
It doesn't make sense. It's such a small number
sorry.
Of people can do
sorry.
It.
Sorry. We ask everybody to be celibate.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if you can't, we have serious problems with you with your
Chandra Mali's father telling me in Irvindavan in about 86 they did a survey of all the greenhouses and asked who was following the principle that none of them were. And 300 or so.
Too bad.
That's a small indication.
What is the idea? That if the norm is that we take vows and break them, then we should institutionalize the norm?
Of course not.
Well, that seems to be what you're saying.
No, no, I'm just talking about the reality.
But the reality then is sad.
The
but it's not that we say, well, we have a sad reality here, we might as well extend it.
With practicality, you're asking people who are homosexual to suppress this.
That's right. We ask the other guys to suppress it too. Now, if they don't, that's their tough luck. And maybe our tough luck also. But we're not going to say, well, you know, since 80% of the people do it, might as well just say, you know, 3.5 is the standard. And there are those who would advocate precisely that four regular principles is impractical, that you can't expect people to follow it, and therefore we shouldn't require it. But Prabhupada wasn't among that group.
No, it's just a logical connection between the fact that in ISKCON it seems very, very small minority of people are able to maintain full celibacy. And on the other hand, we're asking people who have a certain sexual orientation to maintain full celibacy.
Right. We're asking everybody to. They're not. We're not. We're not picking on them.
We're not asking because we are allowing people to get married.
That's right. Because we have that. Just like we don't. That's right. We have room. We have room for that, and we don't have room for this. Therefore, we are exclusionary.
Well, that's what we're
we are exclusionary. We do not have a place for you. If you want to be active, and you know, you want to have a blessed marriage between you and your boyfriend, we do not have a place for you. That's right. Within our movement. You know, coming to the Sunday feast, that's another thing. But as far as, you know, carving out a place, a valid, you know, safe place for you in our movement where we, you know, where we bless your union and all of that, we don't have a place for you. And it's too bad. It's just tough luck that you've chosen an option for which we do not accommodate.
Mm-hmm. My last question that I wanted to ask before I didn't quite get to it was if there are gay people in the room or people we know, perhaps. It seems that this to me would be certainly very discouraging.
Good. You should be discouraged. Why should I be gay?
This is my question, actually. What is our philosophical answer to all those people who find themselves in the wrong party?
If we want to be, like, you know, positive and responsive, I have several philosophical responses, which I think can be, like, helpful for people. One, of course, is that this gender dysphoria, as they call it, which is a proper name for it, they're unhappy with the gender they find themselves in, may be due to your previous lifetime. You know, you were the opposite sex in your previous life, and you haven't gotten over it yet. You're still identifying with your previous life.
Is it that bad that they have to be, I don't know,
sorry?
Treated in the movement?
You're opening up another issue. You know, a person looks at himself and says, you know, I'm a man and I'm attracted to other men. Why am I attracted to other men? And so we may say, well, this is, you know, like leftover stuff. This is leftover stuff from your previous life.
Actually, that's a great way of preaching. Like I was doing Sankirtan and I would meet, you know, people who look gay and I'd say, do you ever think in your last life you were female or something? It's a great way of preaching, but it seems that preaching comes to an end. They're not allowed to come to the temple.
Well, you're bringing in another issue.
Well, that's the issue.
You're bringing in another issue. We've talked about that issue. I'm bringing up, you know, what you said. You know, what do you say to people? So here's the first thing that you can say, that, you know, you may be under the influence of your previous lifetime, and you know you're not a nuclear physicist as you were in your last life, and you're not a potter in West Bengal as you were in your last life, and you're not a woman as you were in your last life. So you're identifying with something which, number one, you're not because you're not this body. But number two, you're really not because that was your last body, not even the one you have now. So, you know, it's like, becomes at least comprehensible. You can make sense out of it. The present explanation is, well, it's just, you know, the way my genes are wired and you know, just as some people have blue eyes and some people have brown eyes, some people are gay, and it just becomes like absolute validation. It's just, this is who I am. You know, just as, this is who I am, I'm gay. And we have a deconstructionist position on that. We say, no, you're not, this is not who you are. Because number one, you're not this body. So you're neither straight nor gay nor American nor German or this or that. And number two, you may be identifying with a body that's long gone even. So it may make things intelligible rather than just say, well, you know, I guess this is what I meant to be and all of that. You know, get over it. You know, get over it. You're not that body that you were in your last life. You're not even the one you are in your present life, but certainly you're not that one. You know, it doesn't have to be presented harshly, but it has interpretive value. It has informative value for a person who's confused and wondering. Or even a person who feels, you know, like adolescents have to, like, figure out their sexuality. And they're being very heavily canvassed. You know, I'll give you an example. I went to the University of California. I went to our Berkeley Temple. And I was taking my morning walk on the campus of the University of California, Berkeley, which has, like, same admission, higher admission standards than Harvard. It's like the top school in the country. And it was orientation week. Pardon the double entendre, but it was orientation week, which is, you know, when the incoming students kind of get a handle on what's going on. And they had this little booklet produced, I think, by the student council or something. And with various words of guidance to the incoming class. And they happened to have like a full page about cults and warning you about, you know, very friendly people who might try to engage you in some sort of a religious experience and who, you know, so they had a whole thing on that. And then they had a double page spread about being gay. And not only being gay, but like kind of how to find out if that was really for you. It was like, you know, how you might try it on and see if it fits. You know, what the bars were and how you make friends with someone or pick someone up or, you know, show that you're interested or, you know, it was like a, whatever it was like, that's what it was about. So you had these, you know, these American parents spending like $20,000 a year send their kid to the University of California and become queer, as we used to say, or gay, as they say now. That aside, it means that young people are trying to figure out what it's all about, are being actively canvassed with this idea that, you know, if you have any affection for other men, then it could very well be that this is really you. This is what, you know, this is what your life is meant for. This is what heaven has in store for you. And we don't subscribe to that point of view. Okay, young people try to figure themselves out. We have another answer to what it's about. We call it friendship. You know, if you're attracted to other men, that's perfectly fine. Make friends with them. But this sex thing is number one. It's counterproductive. It's stupid. From Bhagavad Gita, which I didn't bring with me, but in the same chapter where we find what will repression accomplish, Nigraham Kim Karishyati, we find Krishna, you know, like ending up the chapter with a heavy admonition to Arjuna to conquer lusty desires. Jahi Shatrum Mahabaho Kamarupa Durasana, because lusty desires burn like fire, because they're Jnana Vijnana Nashanam, because they destroy your knowledge and your self-realization. You know, Arjuna, Krishna has like no soft words for the uncontrolled sex impulse. You know, you've got to control this. or your jnana vijnana nasham, you're going to lose your brain, you lose your intelligence, you lose your knowledge, lose your self-realization. You have to control this. It's not that Krishna is speaking of repression in, you know, in the Freudian sense, subscribing to the neo-Freudian view that any attempt to subdue impulses is wrong. I mean, it's so wacko, frankly, that you know, if you try to subdue impulses, you're going to go crazy. If you think about the, you know, like every, practically not a day goes by and I don't feel like just busting somebody in the teeth.
Same here.
Well, do you repress it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you do. Now, you know, is that unhealthy? Are you going to eventually explode because you subdue this impulse? I was walking through Logan Airport, you'll be happy to know, one day. Early in the morning, I had an early flight to catch, and I was a little bit lost, you know, which had to get to my gate, and there was this employee of the airline, of the airport there. So I, you know, was inquiring directions. And this was like 6-7 in the morning. And all of a sudden, this fellow passenger walked by, who happened to be a lady, one of many normal ladies. The guy like spun around. His head just did practically 180 degrees. Did you see that? And, you know, I hate to think what the guy's neck would be like by 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Considering the number of female passengers who walk through Logan Airport in the course of the day. But, you know, now I assume that as distracted as he is, he observes some sort of, exerts some sort of repressive impulse. Otherwise, imagine what the floor of Logan Airport would be like.
Marge, I think it's really a false analogy. I don't follow your rationale at all.
My rationale is that there are certain forms of behavior that are better repressed.
Sure.
That it's healthy.
Can I just ask
that it's socially and individually healthy to repress certain desires. It socially contributes to the better good of the public, and it contributes to one's own psychological health.
We can say that about almost everything. So what I don't understand
We can't say that about almost everything. You know, like suppress reading Bhagavad Gita because it'll be helpful.
I mean, the illicit activities.
Yes.
We can apply that to all of them.
Yes.
So what I really don't understand and quite confused about is why we're differentiating homosexuality from all the other illicit activities.
It's not necessarily that we are. It's not that if you talk to me about cow killing, I'll say, oh, well, you know, it's not as bad as homosexuality, at least. You know, we don't have, like, pleasant things to say about cow killing either. We have a whole lot of things that we have very unpopular positions on.
Is that unpopularity, just if you can clarify...
Extreme, you know, repressive, yes. Negative. Shall we say that? We have a very negative position on cow killing. We have a very negative position on LSD, marijuana, you know, all the things that people lived on back in the 1960s.
We had a very negative position.
Yeah, we do. And I, again, I haven't come out and
no, you have, but what I'm thinking of is the fact that, I mean, you pretty much said, you know, they come.
But if a cow killer, you know, cow killers can change, and so can gays.
So why the exclusion?
I don't exclude them.
Well, you seem to say that before. Certainly, your ideas seem to be pertaining.
Well, let's say there are pragmatic reasons why I'm more apprehensive, phobic, about gays joining our movement than, say, cow killers. Because, you know, what's in it for a cow killer to sneak into the brahmachari ashram and, you know, like, hide behind the stairway and devour a chicken leg or something? Right? I mean, pragmatically speaking, the guy is, you know, what's in it for him? Why should he come? He comes for other things. And if he's addicted to that, you know, our experience shows a good chance he'll change. And if he doesn't, well, he's not going to cause a lot of harm on campus. Whereas you have people who are lusty, either toward women or toward men or toward children, who are socially more destructive in the context of our society, and who are therefore need to be watched more closely and perhaps even sometimes excluded. the chances that that same person, if his problem is being gay, will be disruptive, will be evangelistic, evangelical, that he'll be, canvassing, are higher. I don't need anybody else to eat meat. To fulfill my gay impulses, I need somebody else, namely a guy.
Well, obviously that's a strange analogy, but between the sexual part. We have to stick with the sexual part. If someone's coming and is very lusty, heterosexual,
we may have a problem with it. And we kick people out for that.
So how can you possibly differentiate between the two groups?
I'm not differentiating. They're both lousy. And I just told the story this morning maybe, that there was some guy who groped one of our Gurukul ladies in Vrindavan. They beat the guy. Young Indian guy. The guards took him out and beat him. Not that, at least it was toward a girl. They took the guy out and beat him hard. Because we don't have space for that. Sorry. You want to come and chant Hare Krishna, you want to come and take prasad, you want to come and take darshan of the deities, you want to come and take a piece of one of the girls, we have a problem with you. We don't approve, we have a negative approach or negative orientation toward that sort of behavior. We do. We understand that everyone has lusty desires, we understand that, you can be overcome by them, but, we really insist that you control your damn self. And if you don't, you may get kicked out, or you may even get beaten and kicked out. That's, Vrindavan, there was no question about it. No one blinked. Not like the public thought this was horrible. So we may not be any worse toward gays, You're coming around and canvassing the divinity students. We're not going to be, real receptive to your presence. Sorry. That's just how it is.
So, in the last analysis, is the rate of homosexual people who cannot maintain their celibacy is anywhere near equivalent to the amount of percentage of heterosexual people who can't maintain their
celibacy? Say it again.
If the percentage of homosexual people who cannot maintain their celibacy is equivalent or anywhere near to the percentage of heterosexual people who can't maintain their celibacy, then effectively we're a gay-free society anyway. Because it will exclude the ones, probably 97%, who can't maintain their celibacy, right?
I'm not quite sure of where what applies, but if you mean to say that we have no proper accommodating place in our social structure for active gay behavior, the answer is yes. We do have a place in our society for active heterosexual behavior. We do not have we have no space. We have no space for that behavior.
Can I just ask? Is this?
And it's a behavior. It's not a person that we say, sorry, you're a gay spirit soul, and we don't have gay spirit souls here. Everybody is welcome. But in terms, if you're looking for a place where that behavior is sanctioned and smiled upon, it's not here. We do not accommodate that.
It's just
the nature of our sect. Pardon me?
Can you elaborate what you mean by space?
Yeah, I mean to say that there's a legitimate in various parts of the culture, there's a legitimization of homosexual relationships. Various churches have legitimized it. The secular world gives it a lot of accommodation and approval, and even sort of a affirmative action almost. There you can fit in. You can fit in a secular environment and be whatever you want. You can fit in and act. If you maybe still a little strange, but if your family is you and your boyfriend, well, that's quickly winning acceptability. And there are even churches where they'll do the marriage ceremony for you and so on. We don't really have that. It's not that if you come and do an interview with the temple president and say, my boyfriend and I, would like to join the temple and live here in the on the farm and be together and practice Krishna consciousness. We don't have space for that because that's illicit sex. In the material world, it's just, you know, in the modern screwed up material world, it's just another flavor of preference. It's just another choice. In our world, it's illicit sex. And we have a rule, no illicit sex. So we can't smile on it and say, oh, okay, fine, cabin B over there. We don't have the space for it because it's against our... We have four basic rules, and one of them prohibits this. If you come and say, you know, this is me and this is my wife, and, you know, that's different. We do have space for that. We have rather less space than the rest of the world does, because we expect certain norms within household or life that the rest of the world doesn't expect. But we do have space for it. We don't have space for the boy-boy thing. Our philosophy doesn't accommodate it. Our rules don't accommodate it. We have a problem with it.
It seems that I think we have to differentiate between sexual life and partnership.
Sexual life and partnership.
Like partnership is, you know, heterosexual needs a partner to live with and, I don't know, share things.
Right.
Is it not possible that gay people would lead the same life, living together?
If you have friendship, see, we call that friendship.
I think it's more than friendship.
Well, that's the problem. If it's friendship, we have no problem. You know, you have friends and, you know, and they're men. Great. You know, and you have intimate friends and they're men. Fine. No problem. But you have friends with whom you have an intimate sexual relationship and they happen to be the same gender as you. That's different. That's called illicit sex. Otherwise, friendship, you know, that men have friendship and, you know, love for other men. It's fine. And women have love for other women. It's fine. But when it takes on a sexual dimension, it's not fine. We don't have it's like no illicit friendship. We don't have that. You know, it's fine. Whoever you like. But when it's like, which it frankly is, you know, that we want to be together because we have sexual desires that we find we can accommodate, or we can satisfy by being with one another. You know, we're in love in the sexual sense. Well, that's illicit sex. Otherwise, if you come and tell us that you're friends, and if we believe it, then, you know, fine. We offer the ultimate friendship, that Krishna can be your friend.
When you say, and we believe it, that reminds me of Hridayananda Goswami talking about the bedroom police, and sannyasis being the bedroom police.
Well, what I mean is when you know, a person comes with, you know, like flagrantly gay cultural signs and, you know, with another guy on his arm and says, you know, that we're just friends. I mean, you know, do I believe that? Probably not.
But is it really...
Any more than if you come with a girl on your arm and say that, you know, we're just friends and, you know, we just happen to live together. You know, we don't believe it.
Well, obviously there's the question of space. I mean, allowing someone to live in a temple, something that's something totally different. But then it seems that you're the absolute moral authority for deciding who comes to the temple or not, based on sexuality and what you don't know about what people do.
I think you're extending my position beyond what I stated. Mm-hmm. Don't you? Did I come forward and say I'm the ultimate moral authority on who can come to the temple or not? What I did say, and I'll restate it, was that I'm not terribly bothered if some people decide that our environment is not particularly friendly to their orientation. That doesn't disturb me. And that there might even be pragmatic advantages to us of their making that decision. That's different from saying, you know, I'm going to get my shotgun if they come on the grounds. There's a difference.
If you're making the environment unfriendly for them in whatever way, then that is you being the moral authority, essentially.
No, it's me being the servant of my spiritual master. If I happen to say things that my spiritual master says and you find that those statements cause an unfriendly environment, it's not my fault. I'm doing my job.
Well, you can be more tactful. You can encourage
me. I may, but I may not be tactful. My Guru Maharaj wasn't particularly tactful. He wasn't tactful.
But you seem to encourage everybody to come to the temple and chant Hare Krishna.
That's a different thing. And I may encourage people to come to the temple and chant Hare Krishna also. But when he encouraged people, it's not like they came, he encouraged them, they came to the temple, they were LSD heads, and therefore Prabhupada recognized that and didn't say anything negative about LSD because they might be upset and go away. Prabhupada was real straight about it. And that was the Lower East Side in the 1960s. That's like being anti-gay in San Francisco. You know, that was Prabhupada. He didn't care. He laid it on the line, and he even said, you know, if we get few followers, better, you know, small bit of something pure than heaps of things that are impure. Prabhupada didn't compromise on these points. He just put it out there and criticized the so-called yoga societies that said you can do whatever you like as long as you pay $50 and meditate 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes in the evening. Prabhupada didn't have high regard for that. Prabhupada considered it, I think, a virtue to have strong principles and stick by it. Prabhupada was very, you know, this all-accommodating Prabhupada is such a mythical creation. Prabhupada was so strong. I mean, Prabhupada could be soft, Prabhupada could be, you know, could negotiate, but Prabhupada, you know, a very large part of Prabhupada's personality or of his way of presenting Krishna consciousness was intolerant. You know, there were things he did not tolerate. I'll give you an example. There was one devotee, Prabhupada established ISKCON Press back in the 1960s. Some boys were working very, very hard to learn printing so that they could print Prabhupada's books. And they did. They established a press. They bought a press and they were printing and so on. Prabhupada called me in one day. He came to New York. He called me in. He said, I heard that such and such, the press manager, is not coming to the programs. Is that true? And I didn't want to be a fake or tattletale, you know, but I said, well, Prabhupada, you know, kind of intimated that it might not be false. Prabhupada said, go over there and tell them to close the press. He said, we do not need this press. If they cannot come to the morning program, we do not need this press. Tell them to close the press. Yeah, it wasn't like, well, we understand some people, you know, they're more into printing than chanting Hare Krishna. Tell them to close the press. That was Prabhupada. Strong.
You gave that example where Prabhupada was encouraging this person to give up this nonsense.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I've read another letter. I don't know if it's the same person, but somebody had been engaging in homosexual sex, and he said, give up this nonsense and just come back. And maybe this is something that you can confirm, but I did hear that Prabhupada encouraged gay men to get married, and that was one solution.
Yeah, that Prabhupada did try that.
And sometimes it worked, and sometimes it didn't,
right. Prabhupada, I think, took the position that it was lust, and if lust could get some sort of satisfaction, that would do the trick. Yeah, Prabhupada did encourage some people like that.
So it just seemed to me, I don't know if this is a correct conclusion, that he didn't reject the person and he wanted the person to engage in Krishna consciousness, but he very strongly was, you know, instructing them or encouraging them to give up that activity.
Prabhupada
accepted the person, but he rejected the activity.
Well, Prabhupada accepted every person. You know, every person is spirit soul, and everyone is deserving of compassion and so on. But I'll give you another example. There was a devotee. He also happened to be gay, by the way. And he also happened to seduce one young brahmachari, a very squalid, nasty scene. He fell down pretty hard. But anyway, he was one of the leading members of the society, actually. But this was very early, 1968. 69, and this person, for various reasons, left. But he had been one of the main editors for Prabhupada's books. I talked to you about that person earlier. Really impressive presentation of the philosophy. Really gifted person. And anyway, he kind of had this squalid fall down with one of the young brahmacharis, who he really just seduced, and left. And some years later, quite a number of years later, he showed up at the press where I was working in New York and expressed a willingness to come back. And this person had really been, like Prabhupada called him, a pillar of the society. And he wrote to, I thought, you know, this is wonderful. He's come back and wants to, you know, be back in the movement, and Prabhupada will be so happy. So he wrote to Prabhupada. I'm in due receipt of your letter, dated such and such, 1971, and have noted the contents. I welcome you for your coming back to our society, and you are feeling very nicely the association of devotees. Srila Rupa Goswami has described that devotional service can be advanced by six processes. Perhaps you know them. They are as follows: enthusiasm, patience, conviction, following the regulative principles, being honest in one's profession, and in the association of devotees. So this Krishna Consciousness Society is especially meant for giving people the opportunity to associate with devotees. Devotees means who are following the regulative principles. One cannot be independent and at the same time become a devotee, because all devotional activities are based on surrender. So in the association of devotees, we learn this important item, how to surrender. But if we keep our independence and try to become devotees, that is not possible. You write to say that you cannot feel any taste for temple life or deity worship. This means you are keeping the same temperament you entertained before leaving our society. Our process is to accept both the lines of Bhagavat Marg and Pancharatriki Marg. Perhaps you might have seen the picture of the Gaudiya Mission. On one side there is the Bhagavat book, and on the other side, a picture of Lakshmi Narayan for deity worship. You cannot make any progress in devotional service unless simultaneously you follow both the lines. Just as the tracks of a railroad line, both must be there. Similarly, temple worship is essential for purifying us from the material contamination. And without being purified, we cannot glorify the Lord. As it is stated in Bhagavad Gita, that the Lord is completely pure, and we cannot approach Krishna without being purified. So as you say that you do not feel very much encouraged in deity worship and temple life, I see that your disease is still continuing. Under the circumstances, simple academic career will not help you. If you want to live with us, you must accept temple life, namely clean-shaven head, observing the regulative principles, decorating the body with tilak, etc. You know all these things. So far your editorial work is concerned, I welcome your good service. But if you do not follow temple life and deity worship, it will set a bad example. When I was there in New York last time, I saw that the tendency was there in the press members not to follow the principles. So I said, better to stop the press. Since then, Advaita, that was the press manager, and the others are attending temple worship. Similarly, you must also do the same and chant at least 16 rounds, etc. I am so glad to learn that you are eager to preach, but we should know it, that we cannot preach without being solid in our standing as devotee. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that Apani Yatri Prabhu Jivare Shikaya. This means that Lord Chaitanya wanted that one should preach by behaving himself exactly what he preaches. So our Krishna consciousness movement, preaching, depends on personal behavior. If you want to preach the gospel of Lord Jesus Christ on the principles of Bhagavad Gita, you will find so many differences. Those who are following Jesus Christ, let them follow strictly to the principles of the Bible. Thou shalt not kill is now being misrepresented by Christian priests Now they say, thou shalt not murder. This means trying to save themselves from the crime of animal killing. So you cannot teach such unscrupled followers the message of Bhagavad Gita. If you want to preach Bible, you can tell them why there will be misrepresentation, you can tell them why there will be misinterpretation. Far out letter. In New York, there is a big press that prints Watchtower. They are forcefully criticizing Christian behavior. I read that one Christian priest allowed a marriage between two men, homosex. So these things are going on. So your proposal for preaching the gospel on the basis of Bhagavad Gita will not be successful. If you want to do that, I cannot check you, but I cannot allow you to do such things from within our society. You have to understand our philosophy perfectly, follow the regulative principles, and then, in fact, you can edit our books and papers. When I shall go to Mayapur, then upon hearing from you of my proposal as mentioned above, I shall arrange for your coming to India. First of all, you have to decide yourself whether you are prepared to surrender to our principles. But if you keep your independence, either in Mayapur or New York, your position is the same. To associate with me, you are always welcome, but not with your independence. That will not help me or you. Hoping this finds you in good health, your ever well wisher. There's Prabhupada. And there's the real, as he speaks for himself, Prabhupada. This was like had been a very important person, a very valuable person. And you can see how Prabhupada answers him. So, that's my spiritual master. He didn't accommodate. He didn't put the rules aside just to get people to join or rejoin. He was very strict. And he's my spiritual master. It's not my fault. I'm not inventing these things. You know, I came from where I came from. You know, we were all accommodating. You know, the material orientation that I came from, you know, live and let live, and, you know, to each his own, and, you know, the whole liberal way of looking at the world. But, you know, where did we pick up these rather harsh and strict views? From our spiritual master.
What would you say to someone who came to you and said, I'm gay, I can't, you know, not have sex for the rest of my life? What would you say to them?
You're, you know, good luck.
In what way, how would you encourage them? What can they do?
How would I encourage them? I would probably tell them, you know, you're going to have a real tough road.
Not very encouraging.
Not very encouraging. I'm not, you know, I can tell him, well, fine, you know, just chant Hare Krishna and put your little member to some other gentleman's behind. You know, I can say that, but, you know, why should I cheat the guy?
But what can you do for his spiritual life? That's what I'm asking you. What can you do? He's not allowed to come to the temple or in the temple.
I haven't put up the, you know, the gay is forbidden sign, but the, you know, the fact is that we let people know. If you want to make progress in your spiritual life,
what can they do, though, outside of the mercy?
Chant Hare Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna, read our books, take prasadam, and, you know, pray to Krishna. Show Krishna that you're serious, if you are. But don't kid yourself that you can do this stuff and really make tangible spiritual advancement, because you're not. That's, you know, that's what Prabhupada's saying. Even the heterosexuals, if they think that they're going to keep banging away at it and make spiritual progress, they're not. Mm-hmm. I don't care if they're initiated or they're not initiated or they're, you know, 30-year devotees or something. How do you expect to make progress without following these four regular principles? How do you expect to, you know, drink and make spiritual advancement? How do you expect to have sex with, you know, this or that and make spiritual advancement? So, you know, what do we encourage people to do? Get serious. And okay, if you can, we'll go on chanting, go on reading, pray to Krishna, You know, what we're not, you know, we're not going to say, well, we'll carve out a space for you, just special, where, you know, these things don't matter, and where you really will make spiritual advancement, even though you're breaking these principles. We don't have it.
But they shouldn't have the association of extended community.
Excuse me. The extended community they'll always get, because the extended community is breaking all these rules. Mm-hmm. So the extended community is perfectly available.
Okay, that's no problem.
Fine. The extended community is, you know, under the illusion that they can do all these things and still be, progressive, making progressive advancement. So there's a place for them. That's going to be there. There are going to be people who compromise everything and still flatter themselves that they're doing fine. So there's a place for that. But they're not going to go very far. And what kind of devotees they're in the association of? You know, it's like the blind. It's like cheaters and the cheated. They're finding a level of association where it's going to be very hard for them, but it's available. You know, I know there's like places in there's a particular community I can think of where there's people who are like, you know, straight up and down like a rod of iron. They, every Mangalarti, they're right there, every class, da, da, da. And then there's other devotees there, they, you know, wouldn't want to smoke hash with anyone but a Prabhu. So, you know, it's all available, but, you know, it's like in Vrindavan, you can find all this stuff.
Isn't that a good thing, though? You seem to be quite negative, but isn't there obviously a slow progression?
Is it a good thing? You know, is it that there's a large community of people who are under the bewildered view that they're really making progress in spiritual consciousness at the same time that they're breaking the regular principles and feeling good about themselves? Is it good? No, I don't think it's particularly good. You're just like a drunkard who thinks that, well, you know, if I keep drinking, you know, got cirrhosis of the liver, this, that, the other thing, but, you know, at least I'm happy. You know, at least I'm happy, you know, I'm not being mean to myself, I'm being generous to myself. You know, do we think that person is really in good straits? No. I think the guy's a pathetic case. So, he can do it, you know, we're not going to pass federal legislation forbidding him. It's his life. But, you know, do we say, well, you know, at least he's feeling good about himself? That's become like the standard, you know. Used to matter that you were pleasing Krishna and the spiritual master. Now the thing is to feel good about yourself. Well, I have a problem.
But it's just not a sort of social or spiritual reality. You don't have a very high level of Brahmins.
That's what Prabhupada had in mind.
And then nobody in between, and then just a bunch of karmas in the rest of the world. I just think that it seems that mostly, as Viscon Iford speaks, so it's a very good thing that there is no longer this sort of rift between people living in the temple and the external society.
I don't care where you live. That's not the issue. And we don't mind that there are people who are having difficulty observing one or more of our regulative principles. If they understand that to make spiritual progress, they got to change. But once you institutionalize it and say, well, it really doesn't matter. You know, after all, you're a Vaishnav, you're a Prabhu, you're a devotee, blah, 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 blah. So it really doesn't matter, but that's only a minor thing. You're really adding a lot of water to the milk.
But it's funny to me that you always say that devotees, it seems to be a big issue for you, that people are thinking they're more advanced than they are, or making advancement when they're not. It seems most devotees I meet who are sort of on the fringe or whatever, perfectly aware of where they are. They've chosen not to surrender.
Fine.
It's, of course, a different form of Maya.
Fine, that's a different form of Maya. Then, you know, everybody can do what they want, but our society is particularly meant for taking sincere people who are ready, you know, like Prabhupada said here, you have to change. You know, we're teaching surrender. We're really we're a far out sect. We're not just an accommodationist American secular religion. We're really not. There are those who'd like to bring us into the 21st century and have us be that, But that's not what the founder was presenting. He shave your head. Now, how many people does that attract? You know, how many people, you know, let's get down to it. How many people really get off on the idea of cutting off all their hair?
Bald people.
Huh?
Bald people.
Bald people, yeah, that's it. You know, and but Prabhupada insisted on it. Insisted on it. Yeah, Prabhupada was much less tolerant than we are now. In most of his kind of temples, Prabhupada would see this person with hair. You know, why you were keeping long hairs? It's famous. He blasted one devotee. You know, why you were keeping hippie seeds? You know, just lambasted the guy. Why you were keeping these long hairs? Yeah, there's Prabhupada, you know, insisting that people shave their heads. Now, that's not, you know, I'm sure that Hill and Knowlton didn't advise them to do that. Big Madison Avenue PR for, you know, that was not like made in on Madison Avenue to win followers. But there Prabhupada was. Very strong. And people came anyway. Not a lot of people. You know, we were getting started around the same time TM was getting started. They had millions. And we had, you know, hundreds. But Prabhupada was not willing to go the route, you know, to go the Maharishi route. Just smile at everyone, bless everyone, and tell everyone that, you know, even Prabhupada said our philosophy is, I'm okay, you're not okay. Really? I'm looking better?
You're feeling a little ill before?
Yeah. This is the cure for all the world. Give people a hard time. Now, it's not that, you know, we don't have any sensitivity toward people, or we don't try to help, you know, somebody who's having a problem. We don't have, you know, even won't show even an ounce of compassion for someone. It's not quite as heavy as that. But at least in terms of, you know, laying out the architecture, you know, we can't lay out that kind of building that here's the place for people who are following four regular principles, and here's the place for the ISKCON devotees who are following two, and here's the place for the gay Vaishnavas, and here's the place for the pederast Vaishnavas, and here's the necrophilia Vaishnavas. And, you know, animal lovers.
The flip side of this conversation is that I've been to so many temples where there's obviously gay people there. They go to the temple, they get immersed, they associate.
Yeah, so there it is.
Yeah. But we can't really be expected to ask these people what they do in the bedroom.
Exactly. I mean, therefore, there's you know, it's not that whereas Prinanda Maharaj said, the bedroom police. Before, you know, we check your credentials at the door and ask to see the video clips. you know, we open our doors to all sorts of people. But that's kind of an open house. You know, like in the manner they have, what do they call it, open day? Mm-hmm. They have an open day, you know, and everybody can come and see what's there and give people a view of what we're all about. So we have that, you know, come on Sunday, and whoever you are, and, you know, we have every kind of person. But then, you know, if you want to get serious about this discipline, this way of life, this, you want to be initiated, you want to practice, you know, and that's what this fellow's letter is about, that why should our choice be regarded as anything less than the choice of anyone else? Why should we not be afforded an institutional approval within Krishna consciousness? And the answer is because there's no place for it within the framework of our social norms, as enunciated by the Pandu Acharya and the Shastra. That's why.
Couldn't you make an argument for this person based on Bhagavad Gita? I mean, Krishna presents in the 12th chapter typology. If you can't do this, then do that. If you can't do that, then do this. And he goes all the way from the very best to the very lowest, and says, if you're here at the very bottom, you can still make progress if you do this.
And we have people like that. I mean,
so why can't we present a model for
we do. That's
homosexuals
good.
And say, you know, this is not our ideal.
Yeah.
But you can still do this in a way that's going to help you advance.
Yeah. Give money.
Is that it? Are you serious?
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the lowest point, Krishna says, just give up the fruits of your work for me. Right? That's the bottom of it. Give a contribution. And that was Prabhupada's purport. There's society, every society needs land, every enterprise needs land, people, capital, so on. So you can give capital. So, you know, we're not against pink money.
Are you recording it?
I think we are. You know, so a person who really can't do anything else, but he can contribute. Well, fine, contribute. Or he can, you know, he can do something else. He wants to do some sort of work and give some sort of something. And we have that verse, Bhagavad Gita.
Do we have a gift?
Yeah. Okay.
I have one question.
First thing is, we've got it.
No,
do we? No, sorry, we don't have it. Bengali. Uh-huh.
I have it in my head.
Getting a little late. Wow, look at this. First thing is fix your mind on me without deviation. Basically, be a pure devotee. If you can't do that, then follow the regular principles of bhakti yoga. And then you'll develop a desire. Wow, okay. Everyone turn to page 632.
262.
622. That is chapter 12, text 9. You know, if you can't do pure devotional service on the spontaneous platform, follow the regulative principles. If you can't do that, work for me. Because by working for me, you'll come to the perfect stage. And what is Prabhupada comment here? Every endeavor requires land, capital, organization, and labor, just as in business. The only difference is that in materialism one works for sense gratification, the same work can be done for the satisfaction of Krishna. So if someone has sufficient money, he can help in building an office or temple for Krishna consciousness. Or he can help with publications. There are various fields of activity. One should be interested in such activities. One cannot sacrifice the results of his activities, which means give money. The same person can still sacrifice some percentage to propagate Krishna consciousness. This voluntary service for the cause of Krishna consciousness will help one come to the higher state of love for God, whereupon one becomes perfect. So, that's the next thing. Then if you can't do that, this may be that someone is unable even to sympathize with the activities of Krishna consciousness because of social, familial, or religious activities, considerations, or some other impediments. If one attaches himself directly to the activities of Krishna consciousness, there may be objections. If one has such a problem, it's advised that he sacrifice the accumulated result of his activities for some good cause. So that's the next stage. If you can't even, contribute to the Krishna consciousness movement because you don't appreciate it, you don't have sympathy for it, well, okay, give to the Red Cross, dedicate yourself to social work, do something else than just work for your own sense gratification. Do something something good, be detached and be detached from the fruits of your work. But better than that, Krishna says, is work for me. So work and basically give a contribution. But better than that is to follow the regular principles. Practice, take up bhakti yoga and practice it seriously. And better than that is to be a spontaneous pure devotee. So, yeah, sure, we offer that. We can even advise a person, well, you know, if you don't like our movement, well, at least do something good. You know, do social work, do this and that, the other thing. But we hardly have any sympathy for that. Prabhupada didn't encourage it, you know. They'll do that anyway if they want. But, you know, Prabhupada at least started here, well, give some contribution. You know, our life membership program started partly with that in mind, that, you know, okay, you're not going to practice, but give money. And then Prabhupada's idea was to give money and take books and take our association, and gradually they'll come further and they'll want to do, you know, they'll come forward to start following the principles of bhakti yoga. So sure, there's lots of accommodating space in that way. There is accommodating space in that way. In that sense, every living entity, wherever he's situated, Prabhupada's, you know, he said, I can preach even to the drunkard, that Krishna is the taste of the liquor.
Well, that's the sort of answer I was hoping from you in the beginning. And it seems you've gone a long route, or you've rephrased it in a significant way to make it what is, not from my point of view, but socially acceptable. We can say, okay, these people don't have an institutional part to play in what we're doing. But of course they can come and they can participate to the fullest extent of their abilities. Whereas what you said before appears, you know, to be very, I don't know, what was the word?
Antipathetic.
I mean, I just made that as a comment on Star before. It felt quite dissatisfactory and exclusive.
Well, it is.
Yeah. But it much nicer then.
Well, okay, but Prabhupada was, you know, not that, you know, it was not exactly unrepresentative of Prabhupada's approach. It wasn't that he, you know, had a big campaign to bring all the drunks to the temple and introduce them to Krishna consciousness. But he was making a point that Krishna is everywhere, and even the drunkard, you can give him some realization. Like, all right, Krishna is the taste of the liquor. But otherwise, Prabhupada was preaching very strongly that you can't, no intoxication. It's not like Prabhupada was saying, well, you know, a little nip here and there. He was strong on it. Really strong on it. Okay.
Thank you much.
You know what, the secular society, what will they legitimize next?
I think it's just going to go all the way. I mean, you can have a pet animal if you love it.
Absolutely, that's my prediction also. That's my prediction also, that the next thing is animals. That is my prediction. You will see it.
I did read a news article about an Indian girl marrying her dog.
What?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, I read that.
It was in India.
You will see it. And you'll see the same arguments. The statistically, you know, we know that X number of people, da 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 da.
That's a long history.
Yeah, I know. There's a huge history. I mean, it will all be dragged out. You know that you know it's got back in ancient Greece, da 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 da. And you know, it's inevitable that, you know, some people are just wired that way, da 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 da. And it doesn't, at least doesn't hurt anyone, da 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 da. And, you know, it's just, you know, if some people like men, some people like women, some people like, you know, Doberman Pinschers, you know, it's just, you will see it, and, you know, you will see it, and why should they be discriminated against, and you know, it's okay, you know, but if he's a good teacher, what does it matter if he's, you know, if he's a dog lover? You'll see all of it. This is Kali Yuga. You'll see it, definitely. You will see it. And, you know, we're a little different. The secular society, from one point of view, the secular society has no reason not to be that way, because they have no ultimate standards. Their real standard is whatever, you know, makes you feel good, is good. as long as it doesn't hurt anyone else. You know, they put that in their little caveat. As long as it doesn't hurt anybody else, if it makes you feel good, what's wrong with it? So given that, there's really nothing wrong with sodomy and necrophilia and, you know, the whole range of, you name it, there's really nothing wrong with it. Because sense gratification is sense gratification, and sense gratification is good. Kamo paboga panamai tavanati nishtita, said about the demons. Their idea is that the highest thing in life is kama upaboga, satisfaction of lusty desires and sense enjoyment. So when that's your basic principle, what's all this morality stuff? It's really artificial. You know, all these rules and regulations and taboos and all that stuff. You know, let's get real. Somebody's, you know, if they're going for it, what's wrong? And then it'll come to that, definitely. But we have a different value. We say that the ultimate, that nayam deho deha bhajamnu loke, kashtam kaman arhate bibhujamya. The human life is not meant for the business of the cats and dogs. Simply gratifying the senses, or bidbujam, the business of the hogs, the stool eaters. That's not human life. Not this body, not the human body. Tapo divya, it's meant for tapasya. Brahmasokyam tumanta, by which one gets unlimited happiness, not this miserable material happiness. So we have, you know, we have our orientation. Our orientation is that life is meant for austerity. Because by austerity, you get, by, which means repression, really, means I want to do something, but I say no to myself. By austerity, one makes progress and comes to the point of unlimited spiritual happiness. That's our orientation. And their orientation is, if it doesn't hurt anyone else, and if it feels right to you, then go for it. So there's a, you know, we're headed in opposite directions. We're really headed in opposite directions. And, you know, choose sides. But if you want to be both, which is what this Tritiya Prakriti is about, he wants to do both. Really, he's saying, why can't we do both? Why can't we be this or this or this or this and be Krishna conscious? Well, there's a problem there. You know. Okay, it's not a question of how we treat you, but it's, you know, if you want to rewire the whole philosophy or the whole teaching, it's not acceptable. Just because the rest of the world is wired that way, now we have to be wired that way, otherwise people won't like us. That the rest of the world is headed in one direction, and we're headed in the opposite direction. That's, you know, I don't know how to. Yeah, that's what it is. That's our teaching. Yeah.
It's just, I mean, the Vedas seem to, they allow one to give concession for dovetailing certain desires in spiritual life. Like, you know, Prabhupada says many times, well, you know, if the man wants to have sex life and get married and have a wife and have children, if you like to eat a lot, then
eat prasada.
Cook something and offer it to Krishna. Mm-hmm. And there's, I guess, there's various cases where one can. The Vedas give that prescription, but
right.
It will stop short of certain things. Like it, you know, won't extend to some of the things that you've said, like animals or.
There's one part in Srimad Bhagavatam. I don't want to cut you off. Go ahead.
Well, like even if you want to eat certain types of meat, say that mantra, which means that you know you'll probably kill me in your next life. So it seems that the Vedas are giving certain amount of concession for sense gratification to dovetail it, but it's definitely not going into certain other areas like, children, sex with children.
There's even a place in Srimad Bhagavatam where it says essentially that there's a section of people who are purified by doing everything.
Yeah,
it's like the lowest class of degraded human being. Basically, the advice to them is eat till you puke.
Is it where it says you pour so much fuel on the fire and it swamps it and cuts it?
I don't recall that. But there's a section of people that nothing else can be said to them except eat till you puke. You know, do it. do everything, burn yourself out. You know, just destroy yourself. Just, you know, just burn the candle at both ends. Do everything till you're so absolutely burnt out that you say, there's some place in Bhagavatam where that's. You remember that?
No.
There's a place in Bhagavatam where that's recommended. You know, for people who are like the low. You know, nothing else could be said to them except.
Crackheads and heroin addicts.
Whatever, you know, just do everything. Because anything else you say to them, they'll reject. So do everything. But that's, you know, that's not our standard recommendation. Sattva samshuddhi. We're meant for purifying our existence. The Indian civilization was built that way, in such a way that there was some provision for sense gratification, but people lived according to dharma. They had a sense of duty, they had a sense of principle. There was some compromise in the form of sense gratification. Like householder life is a compromise. But it was set up in such a way that there were duties and there was responsibility. And therefore, by following the duties and responsibility, one made progress. That's Varnashram. You know, we want to make the same progress by getting married and having children and staying together for a few years and ditching our wife and marrying some other girl and, you know, having an affair or two along the way, and, you know, Krishna will understand, and da 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 da. You know, you kind of have to. I know I'm fallen, but accept me as I am. Da 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 da. And you know, well, you know, I realized that, you know, I didn't really love her, and you know, all this stuff. But that's like shameless. The Vedic culture is irresponsible. Of course, you don't love her. You know, how could you love her? But you married her and now you have some duties. And by performance of prescribed duties, one becomes purified. That's there. Even the common person who might not be able to do much for spiritual realization, I gave the example the other day that Prabhupada was talking about this woman who was the wife of the beggar. Was I talking about that here? Prabhupada gave this example that he saw on a train platform one time, this beggar who had been in some disfiguring accident. His face was all gone, he was blind. But he was very clean and nicely dressed. And his wife was sitting next to him. Prabhupada could understand that the wife was taking such care. And that's Vedic civilization, that, you know, whatever, he's my husband, it's my duty. So such a woman becomes, you know, very, very purified. Makes, you know, may not be chanting Hare Krishna, may not be, you know, doing all of that, but just because she's doing her prescribed duty, even in a difficult or, you know, displeasing circumstance, she's elevated. She's elevated. And we have such standards that as soon as there's some inconvenience or I don't like it or you know, I'm more attracted to someone else or I realize that I was naive when I married her and I was, you know, it's just that my temple president told me to and then, you know, da 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 da. How will one be purified? Chanting is our ultimate shelter. We stop here? Getting late? Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much.